All right. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Ask the Expert session on Microsoft Learn. Today, we're going to talk to you about what it's like to build Visual Studio Code out in the open. My name is Sana Ajani. I'm a program manager on the team calling in from New York today. I work on a lot of the social, community, accessibility, and education related stuff for our product.
And I'm Jackson. I've been a software developer on the team for about 2 years now. I work on search, the new welcome page we have in VS Code, a lot of the triage, like the bots that we're running on GitHub, which I'll explain later, and a smattering of other different things.
All right. And we'll be taking your questions the whole time. So we'll have a bit of a presentation for you, but we'll take your feedback questions after our presentation. So you've probably already heard the spiel if you're already watching this, but VS Code was built about 5 to 6 years ago now, and it first came out as a desktop app available on all different platforms, so Mac, Linux, and Windows. It's meant to be a lightweight and flexible code editor. And then recently, some of the more exciting stuff that we've been able to do with the desktop app is actually be able to put it in the browser. So that was the original mission by which VS Code was built. Originally, we wanted to make coding in the browser possible. And 5, 6 years later, we were able to do that with a joint collaboration with GitHub. So VS Code serves as the lightweight web editor that you see in github.dev and CodeSpaces. And that's possible because of the remote development extensions that we've built. These allow you to basically have a desktop-like experience with VS Code, even though your compute is in a server, browser, in a virtual machine in a container elsewhere that's not on your local computer. It's fully developed in the open, and we'll talk more about what that means and what our team does to practice that. It's meant to integrate with a lot of your existing tool chains, so it's meant to integrate with a lot of the other tools and extensions and services that you already use. And we release it as a service. So we'll talk more about, again, how we release it daily and monthly and how that affects our development in the open. So in the last 6 years, we've seen amazing momentum for VS Code. We can now say that we have 18 million plus developers that use our product monthly. And there's been a great extension community ecosystem that's developed around VS Code. There are over 30,000 extensions in the extension marketplace built by over 20,000 extension authors. So no matter what you're looking to do in VS Code, there's probably an extension for it. And it's also really awesome to see the momentum on GitHub. We now have over 120K GitHub stars. So a lot of people like to see the updates and keep track of the repository on GitHub. And the latest report from the Stack Overflow survey tells us that there's a majority of respondents and users use VS Code, and we love to see that growth. We love to see how the community has adopted VS Code in their workflows. The team behind VS Code is smaller than you might think. We recently became a larger team, and I'll explain how, but overall, we have about 50 or so people that work on the team, 40 engineers that work across the VS Code core editor and infrastructure, a lot of the VS Code extensions, and the Python extension. We also have a team of PMs, designers, marketing, content, and everyone to make it a good team effort. Our headquarters are Zurich, Redmond, and Vancouver. So we pretty much have all the hours of the day covered if you ever have an issue and post on GitHub. Probably someone on either part of the world is awake. And we also have more people distributed remotely as well. So our team manages multiple things. Our team manages the VS Code core editor and infrastructure, the workbench, a lot of the UI and performance, the fundamentals like accessibility. That's kind of the core editor. We have the VS Code remote extensions. So that's three of the containers, WSL and SSH extensions that our team also manages. Our team now includes the Python extension as well, which is one of the most downloaded extensions that offers the Python Jupyter data science support that you see in VS Code. But our team also manages the built-in TypeScript support, the GitHub pull request extension, ESLint, and the Azure ML extensions. Other components, we use a lot of other open source components to build VS Code. So we maintain the Monaco editor, which is used in other services besides VS Code. We manage other protocols like the language server protocol, then the debug adapter protocol, and Xterm.js, which contributes to our terminal. And we do a lot of collaborations. We have awesome, really brilliant engineers that are able to collaborate with other engineers like at GitHub, the Electron project, to make VS Code what it is today. And now we'll talk about what development in the open means, because nowadays anyone can really claim to be an open source project as long as they put their code up on GitHub and eventually every now and then sling code across the fence on GitHub. But we really think that development in the open is more about the practices and the processes that you use to build your project and talk to your customers. So one of the things that we do for our project is we really use GitHub as a way to share and be transparent about what it is we're planning to do with VS Code. We put up our roadmap, our iteration and test plans, and our end game plans. So you can keep track and see the exact engineering timeline that we use to build VS Code each month. We post all of the updates and the plans and the items and the issues and the person assigned to it all on GitHub. And we love seeing how the community chimes in and makes sure that we're following through on what we say we're going to do. Everyone on the team contributes code, tests, fixes, and docs for our project. So it's really a team effort to come together each month and put the bow on the project and release it. And all this has really contributed to making us really popular on GitHub. So you can see here that VS Code is the number one project in terms of number of contributors. Over 19,000 people have contributed to the project in some way, whether that's contributing issues, doc fixes, code fixes, and pull requests. It's really awesome to see the community participate in the project as well. And part of being open and being on GitHub is having the entire feedback loop also on GitHub. So we think there's multiple parts to this feedback loop: transparency, collaboration, and iteration. So I have a couple screenshots here as an example of some of the things that we do with the community on GitHub. So we, back in 2019, I think, we wanted to change our icon into the blue like icon that you see today. And we put it on GitHub. We had done this in the past and we realized that, if we want to bring the community with us, we want to make sure that they're aware of what we're planning to do. They're aware of the proposals and brainstorming that we've done as a team. And then we want to hear their feedback before we move in a certain direction. So this was one of the most popular issues on our repo. You can see all the reactions at the bottom left of the screen of the initial issue that was posted. We constantly updated this issue. We were still able to work fast because that's what our team likes to do. We want to work fast and get the job done, but we want to make sure that we bring the community and not spring something completely, suddenly to them. So this was a really great way for all of us to work together and adopt this new icon and have everyone like it.
Yeah, I'm going to speak more about the engineering process that we use specifically for taking all the issues that come in to VS Code and pretty much just sorting through them all. Like, is this going to be an issue that we take? Is it going to be a feature request that we can implement right away? Or is it going to be a feature request that waits a while? So here you'll see that we have over 120,000 issues have been filed against VS Code over the years, which is an absolutely just incredible number of tickets to manage. We're sorting right now by just how many people have talked about them. So some of our most popular feature requests: floating windows, which I'm sure some of you have wanted at some point in the time, changing the font size, Git with a private key password, all these things that are super loved and we really want to help, but for whatever reason we haven't been able to yet. So let's talk about the triage flow. One thing that's really neat, I think, about VS Code and filing issues against VS Code is absolutely every issue that gets filed against VS Code, an engineer on VS Code is going to look at and evaluate. So there's never any sort of middle person where you're talking to them and they're talking to us and we don't really understand what's going on. The only exception to this is if the issue contains the literal text, like, please paste your issue into the clipboard, which sometimes gets left in there way more often than you'd think, but we see that a lot. So how do we have all 120,000 issues looked at by one of our 40 engineers? So we have a couple different passes. The first pass is an automatic issue classifier. So this is a BERT. If you're familiar with like machine learning models, this is like a natural language processing model called BERT, which I fine-tuned on the VS Code issue stream to classify issues. And this maps just you have an issue and which engineer owns that issue. So if it's an issue about search, the issue classifier will look at that and then assign it to me automatically. You can see in the image there, there's an issue about tasks and the issue classifier knows that it's Alex Ross's. And this works exactly 80% of the time. It is tuned to work 80% of the time because there's going to be issues, there's going to be bugs, there's going to be things that the issue classifier doesn't know. And instead of giving all the engineers a bunch of mess to constantly be dealing with, the issue classifier will decide that 20% of the time, okay, I'm not going to touch this. I'm going to let the inbox tracker touch this. And that's another engineer on the team. It rotates each week. And their job, in addition to whatever they're doing, is to look at all the issues that the issue classifier couldn't classify and either give them to an engineer if they're able to figure out what it is, or ask follow-up questions and apply the needs more info label until they can figure out exactly what's going on and who owns it and whether it's a bug or a feature or whatever. So once the feature area owner gets the issue, it's up to them to discuss, to decide what the proper sort of course of action is. If it's a feature request, then is it a feature request that makes a lot of sense and it's something that they're going to implement like immediately or within a couple iterations, or is it something that maybe it makes sense, or is it something that's totally, it just doesn't fit into the VS Code model at all, in which case we just close it out. And we appreciate the feedback, but it's really just not something that could fit in. What's interesting here is that middle ground. So you file an issue and we sort of see it, but we don't necessarily love it. We kind of get it. In that case, we'll put it into the backlog candidates, which is something whereby we're listening directly to the community. So we say, okay, we don't really know if we like this, but we're gonna ask the community, and I'll go on backlog candidates for 60 days. And if it gets 20 upvotes, so 20 community members say, yeah, no, I agree, that's a good issue, then it will be an official issue on our backlog. And for the most part, we do try and tackle these. Sometimes we end up deciding later, like, you know what, actually, that still isn't gonna work. But for the most part, we do look at that and say, okay, the community decided they really want this, so we're gonna give it our best effort and see what happens. Yeah, and the most important part of the entire triaging process is applying this needs more info. Basically, there's a lot of issues where people come in and they have this problem and we try and figure it out, but then they just completely fall off. They stop responding. Maybe the issue is fixed, maybe not. And if it has the needs more info label, it'll just automatically get closed after a week. So instead of us needing to go back and say, are you still there? Can we close this? The bot will automatically do it. And if you get an issue closed with needs more info, you can always feel free to comment on it again and reopen it. That's just to keep our workload down. So let's talk about some of the more triage bots. One of the bots I really like is the English Please bot. So being an international sort of product, we get a good number of issues in languages that nobody on the team understands at all. So in these cases, what do you really do? It's easy to say, sorry, like you need to have, we only work in English, so we're gonna close this out. And that's actually what we used to do, just because we didn't have the ability to support this. But then we decided, oh, you know what, we can use this these GitHub Actions to actually detect what the language is and then reply to the original issue author in their own language and ask them to provide a translator. And you might be wondering, okay, well, why don't you just have, like, why don't you just use machine translation? And it ends up being the case that for a lot of sort of technical documents, like VS Code has a lot of language specific to VS Code, like tasks and commands and views and all these different things, where a machine translator just ends up butchering it usually. So it's really quite nice if we can have somebody who understands both that language and VS Code to be the middleman or middle person translating it. And to facilitate that, in another instance of developing in open, we actually apply these translation required dash, in this case, Korean. So we have community members who speak Korean and know VS Code, and they can just look at that issue and decide, oh, I can help out and provide translations and sort of work with us in getting the issue fixed. And what's really nice about this is, whereas before we might have a lot of bugs that we don't really know about regarding like Unicode things and that sort of issue, now anybody, no matter what language they speak, can raise an issue and we'll have a pretty good chance of being able to communicate with them and get to the bottom of it, which is really nice. Another cool instance of developing in the open is the insider's release bot. So in this case, and author verification. So anytime an issue is closed, we actually track with bots when it gets released into insiders. And for some issues where they're really difficult to sort of track down what the issue is, a lot of the times the author will say like, oh, I have this Windows VM, which is in WSL, and that's connected to this machine, which is running this super old version of this thing, and it doesn't work. And so we can try and like track all that down and make sure the fix worked, but it's really just that's hours of work that we don't want to do. So in that case, we actually let the authors go and verify that the issue fixed and sort of assist in our release pipeline. So instead of us needing to verify that the issue is fixed, they can just do it because they know it best. Yeah. So going back to when an engineer or a feature area owner gets an issue, so sometimes it's not really an issue that should be solved in core. There are so many different types of things where maybe it's language specific or specific to a very certain workflow or that sort of thing. And like Sana mentioned earlier, we have over 30,000 extensions in the marketplace. So how do we manage to support 30,000 things when we're like making new features every month, changing the code every month, doing big refactorings, doing all sorts of things? And the answer is that we have a very, it's not that limited, but we certainly don't expose the full internals of VS Code. We have a specific API that we support. And if somebody has an issue and they want to support some specific thing that maybe doesn't apply to everyone, but could be, they could provide data to VS Code. For instance, if they want to support, here we see rendering raw HTML tags that appear in a markdown string. So this is something where a community member has an idea for an API that they want us to accept. And we look through it and we decide, you know what, yeah, that's okay. And we begin the process of discussing it internally to make sure that we are willing to support that API and develop that API until the end of time. Because we have basically one rule in VS Code, which is we never break extensions. So anybody can propose an API, but for it to be sort of accepted, the entire team has to say, okay, yes, that's a good API. We are willing to support this until the end of time. And one thing that really helps with that is the vscode.propose.dts, where anybody who wants to test out like a proposed API where it hasn't been fully like solidified yet can run their own extensions that or build their own extensions, download the proposed API, and just test it out and provide feedback, which is really great for just figuring out if this is the right API or maybe something should be different, because there are times when we've messed this up where we say, oh, you know what, that API wasn't good. And then we have code that we need to maintain where it's like, this API just, it's bad. And now I'm maintaining it and we're going to be maintaining it forever. but with the proposed API, we do try to limit that.
And this is a good example of, again, working with the community. So like there's a community request and then you can see like there's different like labels or parts of when, like when it's being discussed, when it's an API proposal, and when it's been finalized and then will be updated in the extension API. So there is a good timeline. And I think we make the process of how we include things in the API and how we exclude things pretty clear and transparent over here too.
Yeah, so how do we have these fixes and we're fixing a bunch of bugs every day. How do we make sure that things sort of work? And that's insiders. We have a nightly release of VS Code and everybody on the team uses it. So it's not, it's quite stable, really. I mean, there are bugs from time to time, but anytime there's like a major bug, for instance, data loss, which usually just means like we don't keep track of your like temporary edits, we would like completely halt insiders and not release anymore. So it is stable and we all use it and love it. But because of this, we can get a super quick verification cycle where somebody reports a bug and we say, okay, does this fix it? And then the next day they can say, okay, no, that didn't fix it. And then we can say, oh, interesting. Like, how about this? And they're like, oh yes, that fixes it. So within just a couple of days, like we've iterated multiple times with the community and we're able to diagnose their bugs, which is just amazingly fast.
So shameless plug, if you don't have VS Code Insiders installed, please install it. If you're an avid VS Code user, you're able to have both VS Code and VS Code Stable side by side installed on your computer. And then the ship, the stable build is the one that goes out each month. And this is also a really cool way that we can bring in the community along our development journey. So, you know, every month we have the end game plan. We go through all of our testing as a team and with the community, and then we release it. And our release notes have been likened to the Twilight Saga. They're really engaging. We try to make, you know, tutorials and GIFs about the new features and releases. And the best part is like the section at the end where we're able to go ahead and get a list of everyone who contributed to the project or any of our satellite repositories and give them a shout out in a release note. So it's really cool to see, you know, once we release the on social media, a lot of the contributors like to see them being called out. And it's just a really good feel good thing that we have with the community that we all got to work on this project and release it this month. And we also have started doing more live streams to kind of talk through a lot of the new features and kind of educate people about what's new this month. And then once we do our release, we've gone through the whole development journey, the whole release cycle, and now we do a lot of keeping a pulse on what's happening about how did people like this feature? How do people use this? Is there any issues? So our entire team, is on Twitter, on Stack Overflow, Reddit. We track all of those. We're even on YouTube and TikTok now. And the whole team is able to participate in all these channels and kind of get pulse, respond to people. We try to make it as casual to kind of, you know, if you have a question, DM the VS Code account and we'll try to respond. So that's kind of the way we keep a real-time sentiment on, you know, how the release fared. Again, we said about GitHub, we get over 100 issues a day. So what we try to do in our like calendar year is we try to leave 1 month a year to be just an issue triaging month. So that's actually right now, we're in that right now, it's October. So in October, it's, you know, no new features, but we're just gonna try to go and like respond to a lot of the issues that have opened up and, you know, piled up that maybe we want to go back and track and see if there's any updates on or just close out. So we also do that each year. And then we, you know, keep track of a specific community. So we do have a community for extension authors. We have a community for our screen reader users, and we try to engage with those specific segments of our user base. And then lastly, you know, we do acknowledge that, hey, sometimes our engineering team or PM team called it wrong, and maybe, you know, we should have reevaluated this specific issue, or maybe we implemented this the wrong way, and we're gonna, you know, say we're sorry, bring it back, try to figure out a new way to deal with it, and maybe just release a blog post about, you know, why we did it the way we did, talk about our reasoning, and say, all right, we're sorry. Thank you for, you know, calling us out. Thank you for catching us. So we try to do that on our website, blog post, release notes, all that. All right. And so just to recap what's next for the editor. So you can go on GitHub and, you know, take a look at the roadmap. We publish a year-long roadmap for 2021. But there's a lot of cool stuff coming out with, you know, containers, code spaces, source control, all of that. So, you know, keep an eye out on what's next for the roadmap. And then just a couple of like last call to action. So if you don't already have insiders, you know, install insiders, use it to give us feedback, file an issue on GitHub about what you see, engage with us. So, you know, we have tons of issues, as you saw, and it's Hacktoberfest right now. So look out for the good first issue label. And if you want to contribute and get involved with the project in that way, you can. And then follow us at VS Code on Twitter, YouTube, TikTok to get more updates.
Yep. Cool. So we have a couple of questions from the audience. One question from Manav: why is VS Code free? Any genuine reason? I think a big part of that is it makes a lot of sense to have an open source thing be free, and we really benefit from VS Code being open source. And we benefit from all the community contributions and everything. So it'd be strange to turn around and say, okay, we're going to be the ones profiting from all of your community help here.
The original intent of when we built VS Code, like we built it, and we kind of used it internally at Microsoft, you know, in the Azure portal and the different, like the TypeScript playground. And we were like, oh shoot, this is a really good editor. Like we need to make this public for everyone. Like we can't just put this on Windows. We need to make this cross-platform and give this like really sleek editing experience to everyone out there. Like we think a lot of other developers can benefit from a text editor that can be power-upped with extensions.
Yeah, and it started even with Monica, where in a lot of completely random, unrelated websites, you'll see that if they have a code editor, you can actually use a lot of VS Code's keyboard shortcuts, like Command-D, for instance. And that's because they're using the VS Code editor because we wanted to make a really good editor that anybody could use to edit code on the internet. And question from Not Wearing Pants: why do you close viable issues without 60 upvotes? What's wrong with keeping it open until it gets the upvotes or contributor fixes it? I think issues placed on backlog candidates in general are issues that the feature area owner doesn't really like. It's not a priority for them. So if we weren't developing in the open, that's probably something that the feature area owner would just say, you know what, we aren't going to implement this. Like it's closed 100%. And then we've decided, you know what, we should listen to the community a bit more. We are developing in the open. So we will give them this opportunity to sort of convince us that it is something worth taking on. But that's not like a 100% convince us for the end of time. We do need to have like a stop at the end to say, okay, this really isn't something that the community is interested in. We aren't going to do it.
Yeah, I think it just can, like, keeping a lot of issues open, as you saw, there's like thousands of them that are already open, leads to a lot of stale issues or issues that, you know, months later are still not updated. So like they kind of kept it as like a good cutoff point where, like, if we can get, you know, 60 upvotes, get in a lot of, you know, a couple of people commenting on it, like Jackson said, convince the feature area owner that this should be a priority or this should be back on the roadmap. It's a good way to kind of just manage the thousands of issues that do not get updated or do not, you know, remain stale.
Okay, that's time.
All right. So thank you everyone for joining us. I know we didn't get to as many questions, but feel free to, again, reach out to us on any of the social channels. We love to respond and catch the VS Code live stream where we also will you know, do release parties and bring on other guests for our project as well. So that's at code.visualstudio.com/livestream. All right. Thank you, everyone. Have a good rest of your day.